of your praise painting. Just what is going on in the news is astounding. Los Angeles has made itself the largest city that has allowed recreational marijuana. And they allow recreational marijuana, they've legalized recreational marijuana in Los Angeles County, city and county of Los Angeles. So, and tonight, of course, they have these terrible fires burning in Los Angeles. And it's astounding to watch the winds, Santa Ana winds, blowing hot and carrying fire 60 miles an hour. They had hurricane force winds. So you take that kind of wind and you blow it through houses, through housing areas. It's in Bel Air. And those people that thought they lived lofty and above everything are finding out that fire goes uphill. But you guys, what's happened to this nation is there's a rejection of morality. There's a warfare that's going on against what's right and sensible. And the Bible said these things would come. So we're watching every kind of evidence that Romans chapter 1 is true. So we're seeing these things firsthand, and it's astounding that that the news is carried with such force, those things that are going on. Honduras is still in the midst of turmoil. Zelaya, the man who wanted to be the dictator, has called for a recount of all the votes. The rightful government, I believe, won by 53% of the vote. But because these three groups, three different people, anyway. So they tallied up all their votes and claimed that they have 46% or something. Carmen probably knows more about this than I do. So, but the truth is, what's happening is anarchy. It is drawing the police to either fight for the civility of the country or not. Either we're going to protect the fabric of life in our country or we're not. And you guys, we saw that after our election. There just were riots where people burned and savaged places, beat people. They were vicious in their assaults. So what's happening, this is my Usher thing, but what's happening, you guys, is we're seeing that anarchy is that sense of rebellion against that which is established. So the flesh is trying to tear down establishment and release just anarchy. And so there are people who honestly claim to be anarchists. That's all they want to be. They want to be those people that create turmoil and division and strife and murder and mayhem. And so the world is coming to that place because we're moving away from the creation of God into cosmos, where He's created all these things that work in a pattern. And that's the great thing about the universe. When you look at what God's done, there's a pattern of everything that goes on. Just the moon coming around, you can run a cycle of the moon, and people that keep track of all that stuff can tell you when it's going to be a full moon in the year 3017, because they know exactly when that cycle will come back around. So the earth is spinning and loses no time. And it's amazing that it's just been set in motion, and nobody questions the fuel that keeps it turning. So if you're playing on the playground and you want your sister to push you on the merry-go-round, you need power. Am I right? And so, and she'll only push so long. Why? Because she gets tired. You're thinking, well, he had a big answer there. No, she gets tired pushing. So the thing is, you guys, where we're at right now is the world wants to go back beyond where God created all these things that are consistent. Because inconsistency creates fear. Something that isn't normal creates fear. So everything's great, and everything's going along super until something comes along that changes what you believe should have been going on. Then fear pops up. So that's just the way it works. And God's teaching us, here's where we're at. We want my spirit, we want my presence to stay in charge of the church because it stays consistent. It's going to be the same. So, they, you know, the weatherman can tell you when meteorological winter starts. Doesn't mean it's going to be snowing that day. Just that's when meteorological winter starts. They can tell you when meteorological summer starts. That's because there's a time that the Earth shifts to that particular place, and then as it rotates, it's back where the northern hemisphere is going to have summer. And that's what's precious. So I had a couple of young men I knew that decided they were going to go to Australia and go snorkeling in June and July. So they saved up their money and they pooled their resources and they raced off to Australia in July to snorkel. And it was snowing. So they said to themselves, oops. So I thought, wow, that's interesting. I don't know who sold them the tickets, but whoever it was, yeah, could have saved them, yeah, a trip, because you're not going to snorkel in the snow. Yeah. So the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere, really, you guys, there's a whole bunch of people in the world that don't know the difference between the two. The news today said that our government changed Jerusalem to be the eternal capital of Israel. Okay. They said that for 70 years, no United States president has ever recognized Jerusalem as the Israeli capital. They just have not for 70 years. Well, of course not, you morons, because until 1967, the Arabs owned it. I'm just saying, you know, if you're gonna report the news, you at least need to not snooze through the time frame when things were going on. So they're going back to 1948. Those numbers work out. It's 48, 58. Okay. You count those on your fingers. But if you do not know that Jerusalem was under the Gentiles, according to Jesus' prophecy in Luke, until 1967, it was under the Gentiles until 1967. So, guys, that's an important thing. But our news people don't know that. They just tell you that no United States president ever said that Jerusalem was the eternal capital of Israel. Till today. And business is going to pick up. Business is going to pick up. Because you know what the Bible said? The Bible said that when you see the armies of the world surrounding Jerusalem flee to the mountains, as long as everybody was sharing and their own thought was, hey, we get a share of this. And that's what we've been doing up till now, is everybody had a share of this city, and so it was a no man's land. So then today, the President of the United States said, okay, we're going to stop this nonsense because it actually belongs to Israel. And nobody had the tenacity to stick through the program all the way to the end. We need to pray for Donald Trump. Because here's the thing, if God proclaimed it to be the capital of Israel, and he did, way back when David was king, yeah? And it was not a city that anybody contested. I mean, there were armies that came into Israel and overran it. But you guys, where we are now is an interesting point in time because the rest of the world doesn't want to hear that Jerusalem belongs to the Jews. They do not want to hear that. And God wants to say that. It's the kind of thing that God says. So it's interesting that he used America in this hour. Because, you guys, of all the times we could have said it was strength, we're saying it was incredible weakness. So, anyway, so it's interesting to see what's going on in our world. So God is in charge. I want to go to Ecclesiastes and read a few verses in chapter 8. Ecclesiastes. And actually, okay. So actually, you know, all of Ecclesiastes is so great that you dare not look at the other page. because the other page is just as good as the page you're reading from. Am I right? So, yeah, let's. Okay, 8. All right. Who is he that, who is as the wise man, and who knoweth the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom maketh his face to shine, and the boldness of his face shall be changed. I counsel thee to keep the king's commandment, and that in regard of the oath of God. Be not hasty to go out of his sight. Stand not in an evil thing, for he doeth whatsoever he pleaseth him. Where the word of a king is, there's power. And who may say unto him, what doest thou? So it's interesting, you guys, that we do wisdom the carnal way. And we decide what would be wise and what would be good. And what God is saying is that we need God to give us that wisdom. Wisdom don't come out of the flesh and out of our carnal mind. Jesus said, don't judge after the sight of your eyes or reprove after the hearing of your ears. So we're living in an hour that it's very important for us to have wisdom. But we need instruction from the Lord. So we need God to interpret a thing. Because the flesh interprets things its own way. You know, we've talked lots of times here at the church about Barabbas. Because actually, I've got a little spray bottle up there and a little cloth. I don't know what I did with my glasses, but I must have. But the thing about interpretation comes from God, and what we want is to turn to God to get an interpretation of the things from the Word of God or even from the things that we see. We've talked a lot about Barabbas because Barabbas was a robber, and all of Israel was standing here in the corporation of the people that were gathered. All of Israel wasn't there, but I'm saying that the people that were gathered were representative of the nation. So this composite, this decision-making stood out there outside of Pilate's judgment hall. And there were probably thousands of Jews in this moment because they were having tremendous upheaval and chaos. And when Pilate came out and asked, who should I release? Because they released somebody to set them free. And he wanted to set Jesus free clearly. And so he asked those people, who should I release? They said, Barabbas. And he said, well, what about Christ? They said, crucify him. So you guys, here's the interesting thing. The flesh will always side with Barabbas. The flesh always does. So when you look at the things that go on all the way back we'd go back to the garden. But when you look at what happened to Cain, God deals with Cain and he accepts Abel's sacrifice. And we all can identify with Cain because he was upset. He was frustrated that God, it's like you didn't accept my sacrifice. You accept my brother's sacrifice, but you don't accept mine. We all start from that premise. But God saw that for a long time, Cain's heart was hardening and he was thinking evil thoughts about his brother. So God was listening to this thought process because God sees what's going on inside. What you and I see is that the day that Abel brought his sacrifice and Cain was discouraged, he said, well, you've accepted Abel's sacrifice. You didn't accept mine. And I brought my best. I did my best. I thought for sure you'd see my best. And you guys, there's where we all identify, yes? Because it's a limited space and time. What we're seeing is right now. We haven't seen all the stuff that Cain was thinking about his brother. Because he was thinking seriously angry things about his brother. So what God says is this. I know what's going on in this life of Cain. And when he comes up here to this place, I'm not going to accept his sacrifice because I'm telling him something. I'm telling him, Cain, go back. Get this stuff straightened out. I'm not going to receive your sacrifice because you're angry at your brother. You're angry at your brother. You're already so angry at your brother, you're being tempted to kill him. Now, why would I accept your sacrifice, which would imply everything between you and me is good? I'm not going to. So if I don't accept your sacrifice, you should come and ask me, okay, why didn't you accept my sacrifice? Am I right? Go read that with me just for a second. I'm just saying that the flesh... And Genesis is full of this kind of story. So he's telling him, all right, verse chapter 4. And Adam knew what Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, I've gotten a man from the Lord. There are people who are still teaching today that Eve had a relationship with Satan, and out of that relationship came these two boys. And so the doctrine is called the serpent seed. And it travels. It still travels. You guys, it was in a movie not long ago. Last year or the year before, they had a movie about Noah, I think. Yeah. And so the whole idea is that this birth of these people came out of Satan's relationship with Eve. So here's all you would have to do is read the book. So the book says Adam knew Eve, and that meant that they were intimate. The kind of knowledge here is that he knew her that way. And she conceived, and that's so this first sentence would tear that all to shreds. And there are thousands of people that believe that. And she bare Cain and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, because anger and hatred doesn't come overnight, it came over a process of time. It came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. Cain brought an offering to God. And Abel, he also brought of the first things of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. He was rejected. His gift was rejected. He brought his best. But his heart wasn't clean inside. You see the difference between what God saw and what man would see? Because God weighs the heart of man. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus told people, look, don't bring your offerings to be seen of men. If you bring an offering and you do it in front of men so that they would all see how much offering you give, he said, that's your reward. If you give it secretly, God will see your gift and he'll reward you openly. Jesus said, if you pray, don't pray like the Pharisees in front of everybody to be seen for your great praying. He said, what I want you to do is to pray to the Lord in secret, and God who sees in secret rewards you openly. Well, that's what we want, you guys. We want that sense of prayer. And one of the reasons I pray openly here, you guys, is because we have people that have never learned to pray. The disciples went to pray with Jesus. So the best place to learn to pray is with someone who prays. And that's going out of the church. Because there's all kinds of foolishness that people are doing in prayer. That we need a miracle to deliver the church. And what we need is prayer. People know how to pray and get a hold of God, where the Spirit of the Lord begins to move in the praying because God's directing the prayer. So that's what we want, isn't it? We want that kind of praying. So what Jesus is talking about is if you're doing it to be seen so that everybody can see what a religious leader you are, that's not the same thing. And so what you and I want is to have the Spirit of God direct the prayers. So Cain is the perfect picture here because we can see God had no respect to his offering. And our flesh feels that. When you read this, I think I'm probably 12 years old when I read this the first time. And it bothered me because I saw that God would reject one of the brothers' offering. And you guys, out of a family, you know how tight that sense of connection is, and sometimes competition. And so here Abel is received, and he's the younger brother, and Cain, he's the older brother, and he's rejected. But this is what it said. In verse 5 it said, Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth? And why is that countenance fallen? God's talking to him about what's going on in his life right now. That's why the voice of God is important. Because the voice of God will talk to you. I want it to talk to me just like this. When I'm in the moment and I'm wroth, I want God to say, how come you're wroth? And why is your countenance fallen? He was discouraged. You guys, countenance fallen means that he was downcast. You can see Cain walking across the field and his shoulders are slumped. and his head is down. He's had this encounter. He brought a gift, and God didn't receive it. So now God's talking to him. God didn't let him leave wroth and upset with his countenance fallen. God starts talking to him about the issues and what was really going on. If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? If you're doing well, won't I accept you? I would have accepted your sacrifice, Cain. I would have accepted it. If you do well. You guys, we think that we can live any way we want and we can just claim we're Christians. And it's not true. You guys, we have to hold ourselves accountable to what the Word of God says about righteous actions. There should be in us a hunger and a thirst after righteousness.
Yes.
Hunger for it and thirst for it. You know, the great thing about hunger is you can do well till noon. If you've got something going on, you might not eat till you, late in the afternoon or even evening. Get busy, it's different. But when you're thirsty, you're going to find a place to get a drink. You're going to find a place to get a drink. So he said, I want you to hunger and thirst after righteousness. And you guys, when I came into the Lord, I saw all these Christians that were so far ahead of me. The one thing I wanted was to know the Word of God so I could have a foundation from which to walk. I wanted God to take this Word and put it in me as voice so that I could hear His voice. Because I want Him to be able to use Scriptures to tell me, nope, we don't do that. And He's done that. But that's what I started. But you guys, the reason I started reading the Bible through immediately and praying like I was is because I was hungry to catch up. I felt like I was way behind. I don't know if you've ever left a place with a family reunion or something on a winter, cold winter day, and the last of the people drive away. And you're finally getting your stuff together, and you didn't have quite together, and you threw some stuff in the suitcase, and then you realized, oh, I left some stuff, and you go back to get it, and now everybody's gone. And as you get in your car, the last of the people you know and love is a long ways down the road. There's a loneliness that falls on you there. There's a sense of being left behind. Even though you don't live with them, even if they don't live very far away. We left Otto after a funeral, and Deborah got in her car, and she just drove like the wind. But we'd gathered up and got in the car and everything, and as she was leaving, I could just see the very last of her, little tiny bit of her car as she drove away, that far away. I wanted to catch up with her because it seemed like family. It seemed like, wow, I needed to be somewhere close where she was to see her through that rest of that day like she was had left, and I could feel that loneliness perhaps from her. But you guys, I know that's how I felt. I felt like I've got to keep this integration together. And that's where the Spirit of the Lord is with us. And that's how I felt when I started serving the Lord. It was like everybody that I knew was just so far away that I felt isolated and alone and almost separated. And so I just wanted to begin to run as hard as I could to catch up with the Lord. And I knew that I could read the Word. I knew that I could immerse myself in the Word of God. And I could catch up. And I began to do that. And when I would get home after school, that same thought was on my mind. I'm catching up. I've got to run. I've got to get after this and get closer to Him. And you guys, that's what the Spirit of the Lord put inside of me. And it was hunger. It was like a hunger to me. It was like a thirst to me. It didn't go away. And it hasn't gone away yet. And so that's the thing. When I get busy doing things, and how many of you saw the lights out there that I turned on before you got here? Yeah. So if you got here before I turned the lights on, sorry. It'll be brighter when you go out. So, me too. Thank you. Yeah. It was terrible to get there. I used to stand at the door when people would go out because mostly women park over in that corner. I don't know why that was. Because I don't mind if these big burly guys go out there. When Matt's headed to the car and he's parked in the corner, I just yell, I love you, buddy, and lock the door. But it seemed like when one of the women would go out there, I would linger at the door, wait until they got in the car, wait until you start your car, and then I'd come in, shut the door, and I'd shut the inside lights off and leave the outside lights on until you drove away because you still felt okay. I'm still in the light. But I thought it'd be better to have lights spread all over there. I kept calling Westar Energy and telling them, hey, we've got two vapor lights. Fix them. They keep telling me, yes, we'll fix them. Most certainly. I said, and I want the, bright ones. I don't want that glow-in-the-dark little night lights you got out here on the one pole. I don't know where you got that thing, but I think someone else didn't want it. So, oh, yes, yes, Mr. Waxley, we'll just be right out. We'll send 7 trucks, 9 people, and 2 light bulbs. So God tells Cain, here's the deal, Cain. You got something going on in your heart. I can't accept your gift. You guys, you know, we're the same way. God knows what's going on in our hearts. If there's something going on in my heart, do you know why I want to get it out? Because every day I bring my gifts to God. Every day I bring my gifts to God. And so I have to have clean hands and a pure heart. I have to do this. I can't have something in my heart about somebody on the earth. And you guys, I've had people on the earth snub me and say things bad about me. I like these verses over here on this other page because it says, hey, don't listen to people when they're talking because you'll probably hear your servant curse you. That's what I'm telling you. I just opened up to this. That's why I just read it before I talk. But the thing is, you guys, I don't listen because I don't want to know if my servant curses me. I do not want to know. And that's because I want the Spirit of God to tell me because I want God to reveal a thing. If God's dealing with me about an issue, I want Him to deal with it because He knows how to get me through to the place that I'm hearing what's going on. Yes? So do you. That's what you want. Because you guys, if you listen to what people tell you, other people tell you, or say about you, you could be in trouble. Because sometimes the messengers would like to see you get riled up or hurt your feelings. And you don't care. You just don't necessarily want them to hurt your feelings. Big deal. So, somebody told me, they invited somebody, Fred was preaching, I don't know where I was, Connecticut maybe. It was long, long ago and far, far away. And I don't know what Fred was doing preaching when he was 8 or 9 years old, but anyway, he was just a kid. When I'm telling you long, long ago, he was young. But anyway, but he was here preaching, and the anointing of God moves, yes. That's why I invited Fred, he just moved here. And I was all excited because he's here. And this person told me, yeah, I invited somebody when you were gone. I said, well, that's good, but I knew where we were going, yeah? I invited somebody when you were gone, when I knew you'd be gone. Okay, this is sort of that thing, right? I said, well, good. And then they said, well, because after the service, the person came up and said, wow, this was so wonderful. Is it always like this? And he said, I told him, no. Because normally his brother preaches here. You see, I didn't want to know my servant would curse me. But you know, this is the thing. I said, well, you know what? That's the reason I brought him here. The reason I brought him here is because he's got an effervescent personality. And everywhere he goes, he knows everybody. And if he didn't when he got there, he does before he left there. So that's the reason. He's just one of those people that's got that kind of a personality. So I brought him here because he's like Velcro. Because if he talks to you long enough, the little snubby side of you catches on to the snubby side of him and you can't hardly get apart. Yes? That's Fred. Okay, well said. But you see, what I was saying is, John the Baptist, they came to John, they said, you know that guy you baptized more people than you. John said, well, I'll be a blue-nosed gopher. I don't like him. I don't like anything about him. He's caused trouble. I baptized him, and now he's taking advantage of me, and he's tearing my reputation down, and everybody's going to him. What's wrong with that? I shall fight him on the news. John the Baptist said, he must increase, I must decrease. How is the devil going to stir up trouble in the heart of a man like that? He said, he's the bridegroom. I'm the friend of the bridegroom. He's going to get the bride. Now, wow, he's going to get all the marbles. He's going to have the whole kingdom. Everybody's going to go to him, and I'm going to stand around going, that's what God wanted. See, so what he's telling Cain is, Cain, there's trouble at your heart. You and your brother won't last very long. Something's going to stir you up until you want to hurt him, get rid of him. You guys, that's what the devil does. Not the people of God. So what God tells Cain is, Cain, you got trouble in your heart about your brother. So he says this. Verse 7 said, if you do well, shall you not be accepted? And if you don't do well, sin lieth at the door. Now listen to this. And unto you shall be his desire, and you shall rule over him. This kid loves you. Wow. This kid loves you. What more tender thing could God tell Cain? This kid's desire is to you. He wants to be like you. This kid loves you. You guys. See, that's the thing about brothers fighting brothers. It's about division and strife and all this vainglory and Christians doing the same thing. Because he said there, look, and unto you shall be his desire. You'll rule over this kid, but he loves you. He wants to be like you. Now listen, and Cain talked with Abel, his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. See why God wouldn't accept the sacrifice? Now, you and I could be standing there watching this, and we would say, wow, God ain't just. What kind of God is this? He accepts Abel's sacrifice, and Cain brings his best, and he won't accept his. And look how Cain's countenance fallen. Shame on God. Well, if you've been listening to Cain talk about killing his brother in his heart, you'd realize, well, the devil's trying to destroy Cain. And God is trying to get his attention. Well, if you do well, Cain, if you do well, I'll accept your sacrifice. This kid loves you, and there's a voice telling you he hates you, and I hate you, and everybody hates you, and you're going to kill this kid and get rid of your problem. You're not going to get rid of your problem. You're going to make your problem. So you guys, that's what we want. We want the spirit and presence of God to bring the righteous judgment of God. Righteous judgment of God. That's what you want. That's what I want. I want the Spirit of God to bring us to such a place as that. So he said this. The Lord said unto Cain, where is Abel, thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? You guys, when we begin to harden against a human being, we harden against God. Over in 1 John, he said, you can't say you love your brother or love God and not love your brother. You can't do that. You can't say I love God and that you've not seen, but I don't love my brother that I have seen. God said, no, ain't going to work. That's New Testament. This is Old Testament. The Bible starts this way. The Bible ends that way. So what God's telling us is this stuff that goes on in the heart, God knows all about. And you guys, there are people that suck up and they come around Christians because they want help. They care not for God. They don't care about God. They'll steal from you. There are people that know that because you're a Christian, that Christians are generous and they'll help you. But I got to tell you something. You can burn your resources playing around with the world. Because somebody who is unregenerated is only fooling. And you guys, the Bible said, what fellowship does light have with darkness? Darkness and light don't have compatibility. And so what God is saying is, here's our deal. You can look at the circumstance that you see and say, oh, this worldly person, man, this person just doesn't love him. I had somebody that came to church here for quite a while and I rounded him up. Nobody was around when I was rounding him up. He was the man that was drunk that called me at 1 o'clock in the morning and he fell into peak on the ice and was bleeding. They wouldn't let him in the bar. He asked me to come and get him. I went there. I couldn't find him. But you guys, I rounded him up lots of times. God told me where he was supernaturally several times. And I went and got him. One time he was in an automobile accident in Silver Lake. And God told me, his wife called and said, you know, I have this terrible feeling about my husband. So I went over to her house, talked with her a little while, and I felt an urgency to leave. And instead of coming back on the interstate, I went through Silver Lake. And he had sheared a pole, a power pole, in the town, missed a corner, drunk. But you guys, the thing is, God told me enough was enough. He's done. And that guy had some people that were here in the church, and they were angry with me. And I just said, God told me he wasn't moving in that direction. He wasn't moving in the right way. And so these people honestly took him in. And they several times they corrected me over this issue about this man. And he burned their house down.
Ooh. guys and tell them, here's what you should. God, you've done something. The time is not even come back. God didn't tell me he'd never come back. He just told me leaving on. Leaving on. That's what he wanted to do.
God deals with things until people make up their mind. But you know what? You don't know when people make their mind up. They're not going to go on in God, but God does. So what you want to do is let God do His choice. So this stuff over here talks about, I want to go back to Ecclesiastes. Talks about Cain and Abel, and you couldn't see what was going on in Cain. But you needed God to do it. And that's what the Spirit and presence of God does, you guys, is He brings us to that place that gives us the answer what God is thinking about the thing. Because that's what one of the things that He said here. I want to go back to chapter 8. Okay, so it says, Who is as the wise man, and who knoweth the interpretation of a thing? The interpretation of a thing. How do you interpret something? Because we can see a lot of stuff, you guys, and we don't interpret it right. So you need the Spirit and wisdom of God to bring an interpretation to what you're seeing. A man's wisdom maketh his face to shine. His wisdom maketh his face to shine, but it isn't his wisdom. You understand that, right? The Bible said, pray for wisdom. It's not about a man's wisdom. It's about God's wisdom. He's talking about these things that we get from God. And the boldness of his face shall be changed. I counsel thee to keep the king's commandment, and that in regard of the oath of God. Be not hasty to go out of his sight. Stand not in an evil thing, for he doeth whatsoever pleases him. Where the word of a king is, there's power, and who may say unto him, what doest thou? Who can say to a king, what are you doing? You guys, we judge God by judging his people. So what we want to do is get this place where our heart is pure before the Lord about even judging what other people in the church do. Because one thing is, we want the wisdom of God on the judgment and not what we think is going on. You guys, we've had people that that left this church. They just left this church furious because I was counseling a husband and wife. And they got so furious, they promised they would never come back to this church. And you guys, God did a precious thing and brought the husband and wife through a whole bunch of stuff and brought them back together again. And they turned out to be happy, but the person never came back. But you guys, the accusation was that I wasn't just telling the wife, you be subjected to the husband and everything's going to work out all right. That isn't what I told them. And what God did is actually told the husband, you get your act together. You get things straightened out. He told the wife, there's some things I want changed in you. That's the way God works, isn't it?
Amen.
So you guys, that's how God fixes it. But what the church world does is it just demands that a wife gets in subjection to her husband if he's mean to her. Let him be mean to her because then you're in subjection. And then if anything, you're a martyr. And so you can live that martyred wife life. And you guys, that's despicable. But a lot of Christianity has gone into the martyred wife life. So and Satan loves to make a war in that. That man and his wife were having trouble years ago, and the preachers told them, stay together. The wife was leaving. She's all packed up and leaving. And you guys, she hadn't served God one day. She didn't serve God. And all these years she hadn't served God, and the preacher and his wife saved their marriage by telling her, you got to stay with your husband. Told him, you got to stay with your wife. And you guys, the man has stayed in a turmoil state his whole life because of her drug addictions and her war against him. And you guys, you couldn't fix the thing. And the man had no peace, and he lived in a realm that was so tormented that he tried to find a way just to get by day by day. And you guys, they didn't fix the marriage. They fixed the problem so it looked like the church did a great thing. And the church got a pat on the back, and the church is still telling testimonies like that. Those people still tell their testimonies. We saved marriages. Now we're in the marriage business. They told that same preacher told a woman who was married to a Hindu. And God told her to get a divorce because she's getting ready to have a child. And God told that woman, get away from that man because he's going to turn serious Hindu.
And he's going to raise your child as a Hindu. Is that what you want? And she wasn't much of a Christian. When they got married, she wasn't enough of a Christian to care if he's a Hindu. And he wasn't enough of a Hindu to care if she's a Christian. You get that? But then when they had the baby, it was sort of like, wow, somebody's owned this baby eternally. And she got a divorce. And that preacher, you know what that preacher told that woman? He said, if you'd counseled with me, I could have saved your marriage. Oh, that's Christian sounding. I could have saved your marriage. I'm a marriage counseling man. And you know what? They're held accountable for the lives they destroy when they do that kind of stuff. I'm just telling you the truth. And when, because I counseled her to go ahead and leave this guy. And so she came to me and said, you know what that preacher told me? I said, no, I don't know what my servants say. Spare me the details. Evidently she told me, or I couldn't have told you the story. She said, well, I'm going to tell you anyway. If you're saving marriages between a Christian and a Hindu, you don't know light and dark. But the word marriage is, you better throw the word marriage out and start getting straight with God. Because God said, don't be unequally yoked with darkness. Don't be unequally yoked with darkness. So if there's darkness, you want to get equally yoked with God. And that's what the Spirit and presence of God is doing to us. So he said this, who can say to a king, what are you doing? You guys, that's the bottom issue with me. Let God be God. Let God be God. Let God do the things that only God can do. God knows how to make the difference. And he knows how to put our lives back together again, you guys. And that's what he'd rather do. He'd rather work through the issues and get it straightened out than to pretend like you're going to have one really unhappy person and one really happy person and you're going to have a great marriage. If your wife is buying hacksaw blades and putting in her own cake, you better wake up. If she thumbs down truckers on the interstate, you better pay attention. Am I right? Because here's the thing, you guys. We want to be wise in the body of Christ. It's about God bringing us through to a victory. It's not about telling somebody, oh, you're going to be happy. It isn't about that. It's about, let's get the things right. You tell me what's wrong. And I'll make the adjustments. You tell me what you want different. And I'll deal with the adjustments. We can deal with this thing. But you tell me what's going on. And you guys, it's very hard to be honest with somebody who treats you angry when they get honest with you. You're thinking, we haven't asked any questions yet. Can I ask you a question? Yes. When will this be over? Good point. Good point. So what you want is wisdom from God. You want God's wisdom. You don't want to see something that your compassion says, well, I know how to fix this. Because sometimes the people that are crying because they're so angry they can't control their anger. And you think, oh, my heart's stirred. Look, the tears. You better be careful if you listen to tears. You need to be very, very careful what you listen to because the Spirit of God will tell you, well, this really isn't the way that looks. And that's what God does, you guys. That's how he fixes what's going on. He knows how to fix it. The woman at the well would tell Jesus, I have no husband when she's living with a man. And he wasn't married to her. That's true. But she's living with him. So you guys, here's the thing. But he didn't look with his eyes. And he didn't listen with his ears. She said, I don't have a husband. He said, that's true. But the Spirit of God revealed to him. Because said, who is the wise man? And who knoweth the interpretation of a thing? He stood there at that well and said, God, I feel I need to talk to this woman. Interpret it for me. No, I'm telling you the truth. This is what will happen to you. If you feel that turmoil inside of you, and you've all felt those things, you guys, this is God talking to you. And you're just there. But if you start praying, you know what? I'm at a well, and there's a single woman here. I get a feeling I need to talk to her. I don't know what to talk about. You think, oh, Jesus knew what to talk about. He diverted himself, went 23 miles or more out of his way just to get to that well. But here's the thing. You guys, the great thing about it is that he waited to talk to her. He said, get me a drink. So he'd be later. Don't leave yet. Don't leave. I need to talk to you. Let me talk to you. She didn't leave. Said, if you ask me, I'll give you a drink. You'll never thirst again. You know the story. Well, you guys, here's the thing. He waited for that interpretation from God. Then he said, okay. And because he could feel that she was really touched that he would even talk to her. And so he said, okay, this issue is that you are looking for a mate. You're looking for somebody. You're looking for a fulfillment of your life. He was watching. And you guys, then he could say, okay, if you're looking for a mate, bring your husband and we'll talk about this. We can talk about what's going on with you. And she said, I don't have a husband. And the Spirit of the Lord said, that's true. She said, five husbands. And the man she's living with now is not her own. See, God will lead you up to that place. I've had God do that to me, and I had no idea what to talk about. I just had no idea what to talk about. I just waited, but I knew to wait. I delayed people and talked to them because I knew there was a subject I needed to talk about, something that a person could relate to. And I just waited for an opportunity to say something. And you guys, once God gives me something to ask or something to say, I just do it. And that's what you want. You want the Spirit of the Lord. And out of that comes great message from God. But you guys, that's what you want. You want that interpretation from God. You want to know. But you want to linger sometimes, yes? Linger around somebody. That's what He wants you to do. Is to wait and linger and get that information that comes from God. Because God knows how to do it. And sometimes we're wasting our time on somebody who's not going the right direction. And while we're wasting our time with our mind consumed by them, you guys, God brings us someone else. We're not paying any attention to the woman of the well. Because we're watching somebody that walked off and we wanted to talk to them instead. God knows how to get me and you at the right frame of mind, but we sometimes need our mind cleansed and clarified so that we can hear from God about the person. So He said this, whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil thing. What He means by that is if you walk with God and obey Me, He said, if you love Me, keep My commandments. When you have a love relationship with God that wants to please Him, you'll find that your faith makes you feel secure in the things of God. When you don't walk there with that confidence in God, you feel like there's something between you and God. Like Cain had. There was something between him and God. It was what was inside of his mind and heart. And God wanted that broken off. And so He wanted to bring Cain to such a place that he knew that. And so this recognition of what's going on inside of you and me is an awful important part. So He wants us to come to that place that we pay attention, okay, this is going on inside of me. And I want that changed. I want God to deal with me in a way that makes this difference in me and breaks this stuff down so that I can honestly know what You're telling me to do. Because I love God. I just love Him. And that's the reason I want to please Him. Keeping His commandments out of loving Him is just to please Him. When you love somebody and you want to please Him, you know exactly, you know, Leonard's mom knew what he loved for his birthday. If she's fixing the meal for his birthday, he got exactly what he loved. When he went back to Tennessee, she fixed that for him as soon as he arrived in Tennessee. No, this woman would cook you out of your mind. And she could cook anything. So the thing is, but she knew what he loved. She loved this kid. And she could fix him exactly what he wanted. And you guys, that's the precious thing about what love does. And he didn't have to call and say, Mom, would you fix that for me? It's in the oven, Leonard. It'll be ready when you get here. Come on, boy, drive fast. It's the way love is, yes? And that's what love does with commandments. So that's what he's saying here, is if you do that, then you don't feel any evil thing. Because your mind will tell you, wow, I feel like something could happen bad. You can just get up in the morning and feel like, wow, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like something could happen to the children. We've all had that. See, that's what the devil tells you, and what your mind tells you is it'll tell you things about what's going on around you, and you make application to yourself, and then you feel like evil could touch you. You feel like evil could touch you. And the truth is, you guys, the Spirit and presence of God keeps you. And that's what you want. You want this thing. Because it says here, whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil thing. Because the evil thing, you guys, it said you'll feel no evil thing. He didn't say you'd see no evil thing. He knew what was going to be on television. But he said you'll feel no evil thing because faith abounds beyond that thought that God will let you down or God that wouldn't protect you. And so, you guys, these things come against us. And what we want is to have the Spirit and presence of God remind us, if you keep My commandments, you will feel no evil thing. And I went through some really difficult times, you guys. And I was serving God and under the tent, and He was doing miracles all over the place. And I was feeling an evil thing. I was feeling an evil thing. And that's because what the devil wanted to do was stop me from going on and doing the things God called me to do. I could hardly leave Arkansas in the summertime with a tent because I was under such an emotional depression that I couldn't take things not working absolutely right. I needed things to work absolutely predictable for me because otherwise it would turmoil beyond normal. I got into Harrison one night and realized I'd left my lunch. And I was so vexed, you guys, that I just turned on the blue lights and siren and headed home. And I could just pass everybody on the road. Man, they were pulling over like I had an emergency. And I just headed out because until I had that lunch with me, I felt like I was losing my mind. How could I leave my lunch? I told myself, pick it up. And as soon as I got up into, because I lived in a different county, as soon as I left Boone County, I shut off all the lights and stuff and just went to the house and got my lunch. But you guys, when I got that lunch in the car, the predictability came back somewhat. And that it didn't mean that the torment left. It just meant that I felt like I'd gotten my lunch back. Now, when you go out with a gospel tent, you can't get your lunch back. Because people are going to come under the tent that need something from God. And you need a miracle from God. For them, every time you put the curtains up on that tent, people are going to come or not come. Or the weather's going to get bad. Or you're going to be in the middle of a horrific storm and the devil will tell you it's going to blow the tent down and kill the people in the tent. So how do you get that predictability where you feel safe inside? God said, you don't need that safe inside. I'm going to take care of you. And I just lived on He could take care of me. I lived on what He could. And you guys, I had no insurance. And when I wanted to set the tent up, they'd say, well, you have to have insurance to use our property. And I learned to say, I can give you a letter of liability. I owned, my property was not paid for in Arkansas. And it would only have been worth $8,000 if it was paid off. But it wasn't. I didn't own the truck I drove around in because I was making payments on it. And I owed $4,000 on it. But I didn't have it paid off so you could have what was left of what I didn't owe on that. And then I had a 72 Ford something. And you could have that. So my letter of liability wouldn't get you in the emergency room and out. And I knew that. So I just prayed, God, please don't let anybody break their leg under this tent. Please protect the people coming to this tent. And you guys, we were out in western Kansas and had a storm come up while the tent was loaded with people. And the wind was blowing so hard that the canvas came down within maybe 8 feet of the floor. And this thing stretched up 20-some feet in the air. And I'm realizing, God, we got a wind going on that's about to bring this place down. And we got all these poles and all these anchors in the ground. This place is going to turn into a steel-driven force. I need a miracle. And then there's no basement, and they can't even get in their cars. Because I got to tell you one thing about the storms that come up in western Kansas. You know your car can do you no good. I didn't need no hail, and I didn't need no more wind. And I just prayed, standing on that platform, and I could hardly talk about the storm. But I was talking, and I was talking about God. And I was talking about how He keeps us safe. And that thing lifted up. You guys, I know God knows how to bring us through these things because it's the kind of God He is. But God put me through a place where that evil thing wanted to stop me from doing the things of God. And you know what it did? It drove me into the weight room. I was in the spiritual weight room all day long because I just stayed in prayer because the one thing I was doing constantly is pushing against the voice of that spirit that was trying to torment me. And you guys, what I learned was, man, if you push against anything that much, it's like starting out with a little old lady to arm wrestle, and before you know it, her arm is as big as Arnold Schwarzenegger's arm. It's like, how'd you get that arm so big? It's because I wrestle people every day. Am I right? Yes. So when you push against the enemy, he tries to mess with you, tries to torment you, or tries to lie to you. You push against him. What happens is you can't get weaker. You get stronger. But you'll feel weaker because he talks the whole time he's pushing. Oh, look out. What's behind you? Oh, yeah, it's going to get you. I'm going to kill you. Torment you out of your mind. But you have to look. You know he talks the whole time. I'm going to win over you. I'm going to win over this thing. I'm going to do something to you. I'm going to mess with you. You can't stop me. I'm going to mess with your family. I'm going to mess. It's like, would you leave me alone? So keep the commandments. Go back to that. Because God keeps us. That's what God does, you guys. He answers prayer. And you guys, we know that God answers prayer here because we see Him answering prayer here all the time. And we've learned to pray hard.
All right. Whosoever keepeth the commandments shall feel no evil thing. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. You're going to get anxious. And the reason you're anxious is because it's before the time. Am I right? How many of you ever wanted to get out in the field and plant corn in February? All of us gardeners, come on, be honest. We just wish it was warm enough so the seed didn't die in the ground. Yes? But what you notice, there's a time. So, in a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. Because God may tell me no. God may tell me no. I want to be told no by God and follow through and let Him lead me in what He's doing. God knows how to do that. Okay. Because verse 6 says, to every purpose there is time and judgment. Therefore, the misery of man is great upon him. I just wanted, now if you have questions, we can go to them. But you can see, you guys, because to every purpose there's a time and a judgment. Let God do the judging. The prodigal son left. Yeah? And the father didn't chase him down, didn't send servants to get him, didn't let him come back and get grub every once in a while, didn't send the fat calf to where he was living in the pigsty. You know what he did? He said, your brother's dead. His debt insurance doesn't sin. Let him go out and live like he's going to live. And then let him come back. If he'll ever come back, let him come back. The old man wanted him to come back. But you know what he wanted? He wanted him to want to come back. When you come back, you want to come back. You want to live for God, live for God. You want to live for the world, live for the world. You go do what you're going to do. Then you come back and show me. Come back in a year. Show me what you've done with this year. We'll see the choices that you made. You guys, that's an important thing. That's an important thing. So a lot of us go through that when we first get 18 or 17 or 15. Some of us do it at 14. But you guys, we need to pray. You know, something's going on in the judgment of God. And when you see those fires racing up those mountains, and not everybody's home is a palace. Some of those people are losing homes that they're going to scarcely be able to recover. And I don't know about fire insurance in California. That's like flood insurance on Florida Keys. How do you buy flood insurance in a place that gets flooded all the time? So I don't know what goes on in this stuff, but people are in terrible distress in this country. And you guys, the judgment is certainly begun. This is, California has burned almost consistently. And I mean cities. They used to have their mountain fires, and people get up there and those firefighters would fight them, and the airplanes would come by and the tankers and all that stuff. But you guys, this is in the cities. This is burning cities to the ground. This fire is in the middle of Los Angeles. Ventura, I mean, this is downtown. This is moving downtown. Mars winds are supposed to be the worst they've had yet. So you guys, there's nothing you can do with a fire that's 2,000 or 3,000 degrees hot because it's being fanned by the wind like that. So we need the Spirit and presence of God to tell us where to go and when to go. And let Him lead us on what's going on. So, all right. Okay. Love you guys. Lord bless you. Go in peace. And we will see you Friday, as the Lord permits it.